Hey, it's Jacob Goldstein from Business History. In our new series, American Genius, we tell the stories of three great writers who changed the way business works in America. Our first episode is about Benjamin Franklin, who, among many other things, was a best-selling business writer. Take a listen.
He's writing this much later in his life, consciously creating this image of himself. And I do want to emphasize how unusual this model is at the time, this self-made man myth, because you don't want to be self-made. It's low class to be self-made. You know, this idea that we have today is the opposite, right? And it comes from Franklin. Today, there is the derisive term nepo baby.
Well, exactly right. And these days, if you are a billionaire, you had better have a Benjamin Franklin story about starting in a garage, coming up with the idea from nothing.
And here is Benjamin Franklin inventing it right before our eyes.
This has been brought to you by Odoo. To listen to more of our American Genius series, listen to Business History. New episodes release every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States in Africa. I welcome Bill Whalen of the Hoover Institution. He podcasts regularly, Matter of Policy and Politics podcast, and Goodfellas with his fellows in the Hoover Institution, Mr. Cochran, Mr. McMaster, and Mr. Ferguson. But right now we're following Bill in a recent column he posted about the former junior senator from California, who is now vice president of the United States and remains a puzzle to many of the political touts. But in Africa, if I follow Bill's reporting carefully on in California on Your Mind, the vice president found her speed. Bill, a very good evening to you. This column reads joyously. Zambia, Ghana, Tanzania. This is inspiring. They waited till past the midterm. Your measure of the vice president, did she enjoy herself? Did she loosen up on this tour?
I think she certainly loosened up as compared to being in Washington and kind of suffering the slings and arrows of misfortune, which comes with her job of almost every day, somebody writing or speculating about why she's not particularly good at it, or will Joe Biden kick her off the ticket and so on and so forth. So I think for her, somewhat liberating experience to go to Africa. But even with the trip to Africa, John, Kamala Harris suffers to catch a break in at least two regards. Number one, there's some snarky remarks about how while her trip to Africa was historic as the first woman vice president, woman of color, to hold that office, it paled by comparison to Barack Obama's tour of Africa when he was president. When she was on her tour of Africa, the trip quickly got overshadowed by one Donald J. Trump. She found herself in a press conference with the head of another nation having to fend off questions about Trump's indictment. So the poor woman just kind of suffers. Even when she wins, she loses.
The vice president, however, is in a very important position given the president's decision to run for reelection. Because if this was a normal political cycle, it's not. The vice president would be the person that the party looked to because of name recognition, because of continuity. At this point, we don't know what the president's going to decide, although there's strong indication that he will run for reelection. And there's speculation that the vice president would stay with him. So I want to go back to Africa because Africa is an answer to those who said that trip by the vice president early in the administration, the one to the Northern Triangle, was a failure. I don't think it was a failure. That's a complete nightmare. We're dealing with immigration, narco-terrorism, states that switch from Taiwan to Beijing. I mean, a complete library of troubles in foreign affairs in Central America. Whereas in Africa, according to your reporting, the vice president was welcomed warmly and celebrated. Is that correct?
She was celebrated, and she also did something clever on that trip. She took some shots at China, John, because China, as you know, as you document very well on your show when you delve into foreign policy, China meddles all over the world, very much in Africa, where it's not only, you know, set up a naval installation in Djibouti, but it's loaning money out left and right and basically kind of almost like a drug dealer getting those nations hooked on its currency. And so Harris very deftly, in one of her stops, called on China to forgive loans here. Very clever use of geopolitics on her part. And that really is kind of an important part about her trip. And then Africa is becoming a proving grounds between the United States and China. There's a very larger conversation to go on here, and I defer to some of my Hoover colleagues who are much better versed in this than myself. But it's as simple as the competition, John, between the dollar and the yuan. But also, if you're a nation in a developing continent like Africa or the Middle East right now, you're starting to make long-term bets. You see, there's the Saudi Arabia, which agreed to let the Chinese purchase oil with their own currency and not the dollar. So it's, you know, it's a financial stakes here, but it's also what we would have said back in the Cold War, John, the winning of hearts and minds that's going on here. So good for her to make the visit. But, you know, the problem, though, is once she landed back in Washington, D.C., she still faces the same problems haunting her as the vice president, that she's just not popular. And there's still kind of a question of whether or not she's up to this job. And yes, as you mentioned, assuming Biden runs in 2024, he will turn 82 not long after that election. And if Donald Trump is not his opponent, then Biden's age and her ability to succeed him effectively will become issues. Less so if Trump is the opponent. But if it's not Trump as an opponent, then she's going to be front and center.
I go right to your column, Bill, because you anticipated all of this. Richard Nixon, 1956, on Dwight David Eisenhower's ticket for the second term. Mr. Eisenhower, I'm following your reporting because I don't do arithmetic very well. It was 22 years older than Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was enormously controversial. To say he was unpopular is an understatement. Had been since he'd run for the Senate seat in 1950 in California and had used communism as a tool to bash his opponent. Now, it would be hard-pressed to say that Kamala Harris matched the unpopularity of Richard Nixon. No one did. Remember, Bill, early on, even when he was in the House, the Washington Post famous correspondent Erblach took a liking to using Richard Nixon as a villain, the long dark beard, the checkered speech. So, Richard Nixon, I hear he did well after 56, Bill.
Well, so the 56 story is fascinating. And thanks for mentioning the age gap, because the age gap between Eisenhower, born in 1890, and Nixon, 1913, is almost exactly the same age gap between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, which is 22, almost 23 years. Just a really kind of fascinating historical parallel, if you will. In 1956, there were questions about Eisenhower's health, and yes, Nixon's role within the party. And Harold Stassen, of all people, Mr. Multiple Presidential Candidates, tried to make it his mission to submarine Nixon at the National Convention and failed at doing so. And it's very hard to take out vice presidents in that regard. But, you know, Kamala Harris is not Richard Nixon in terms of how she got this job. She got it for very different reasons than Nixon did. She got it in large part because of cosmetics, because, you know, Biden really wanted a woman on the ticket. He wanted a woman of color, and there was Kamala. But, you know, the funny thing about it, and this is analogous to Eisenhower, Eisenhower made Nixon's life difficult in that Eisenhower, through a great part of 1956, not until the National Convention, John, will not get in front of the cameras and say, "I stand by my man." Instead, he sort of let the speculation go on. He kind of let Nixon dangle out there in the wind. Biden hasn't quite done the same thing with Harris. But what's interesting is that he has given her a couple of bad breaks. He put her in charge of border policy when he really didn't have a border policy. And he put her in charge of the voting rights bill in the Senate when most people knew, because of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, that thing was dead on arrival. So, you know, for a guy who once held the job himself and knows that it's a problematic position to have, you think he might have done her, you know, a little favor by giving her a couple of things she actually could have won.
Oh, all right. Let's go. Let's stay with Richard Nixon. At no point, I'm going to take up the case of, you know, if Nixon can do it. At no point has Kamala Harris suffered anything or endured anything like the Checkers speech. Let us recall, what is Checkers? It has to do with an allegation during the campaign in 52 that Richard Nixon accepted favors or rewards from campaign admirers. And one of them, Richard Nixon brilliantly turned into the Checkers speech about the little dog, and I'm not going to give it back. Now, the story is that Richard Nixon made that speech by himself in a studio in Los Angeles and then got on a plane to go back on the campaign and didn't know whether Eisenhower was going to forgive him or not. He really didn't know. My memory is it wasn't until he got to West Virginia he got the word that Ike said, I'm going to stay with him. At no point has Kamala Harris and Joe Biden ever come to a sharp disagreement like that.
Mm-hmm. No, they haven't, Joe. But, you know, Richard Nixon, a Californian, Kamala Harris, a Californian, though she grew up in Oakland. Look at her lifestyle right now compared to Richard Nixon's. John, I don't know if you've been to the Nixon Library or not in Yorba Linda, but the first thing that strikes you when you go in there, is you see that incredibly humble little Sears home that he grew up in. And Nixon, that was a defining thing for Nixon throughout his life. We all love to kind of stretch Nixon on the couch and psychoanalyze him. And part of, you know, Nixon's challenge is, well, he grew up as a have-not. He always felt as kind of an outsider, that others had it better than him. You know, I think between that and, you know, the nature of the 1960 election, losing to, you know, a playboy like John Kennedy, that obviously messed with him. Kamala Harris lives a very glamorous existence in Brentwood, California. She is a beautiful person, the kind of person who Nixon would not like. So they're very different in that regard. But, you know, you kind of get down to core competency and political skills here. And we can question Nixon's, you know, character. We can question Nixon's choices. But Richard Nixon at all times was a brilliant strategist. Richard Nixon, you know, was a very competent president. And what dogs Kamala Harris is just the core question of whether or not she is competent in this job. And she just unfortunately has not shown an ability to change that.
More history. In your column, Bill, you introduced me to this. The speculation is that John Kennedy, had he survived, would have replaced LBJ on the 1964 Democratic ticket. There would have been some fireworks if that had happened, but they never, the story is, they never enjoyed each other's company. There was nothing but enmity between Bobby Kennedy and the Johnson people, and the vice presidency was extremely uncomfortable. And yet, Lyndon Johnson, surviving John Kennedy, becomes a very powerful and very effective president. So just because they don't get along or because one treats the other poorly doesn't mean the future for an election process is fixed.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. The Kennedy fascination just doesn't go away, John. I mean, the man was killed. Next year will be 60 years since he was killed. But yet we go on speculation. The journalist Jeff Greenfield wrote a wonderful book called "Had Kennedy Lived," and it just goes into the second term, and it includes him dumping LBJ in 1964. The assumption being that if he was running against Goldwater, he would have been in such a strong position in the reelection that he could afford to get rid of Johnson and risk the backlash in Texas. But getting back to Kamala here. So there's always, you know, idle speculation that Joe Biden's going to toss Kamala Harris off the ticket. She's a quote-unquote liability. Her poll numbers are not strong. But here's the problem, plain and simple, John, to anybody entertaining this notion. What is today's Democratic Party, John? It's a party that rests upon identity politics, plain and simple. Kamala Harris is is just emblematic of that. The first woman of color, the first woman to hold that job. Joe Biden dumping her off the ticket, there would be hell to pay for him with Democratic activists. And ask yourself, John, who could replace her with to do that kind of twofer? I mean, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez comes to mind, but not an Amy Klobuchar, not an Elizabeth Warren, certainly not a man of the job. So I don't want to be so mean as to say he is stuck with her, but this really is how he has cast his lot. So as much as people like to speculate about this, and let me emphasize, an election year, that is the key word here, speculation. You go back to 2012, and there was speculation that Barack Obama was going to ditch Joe Biden and bring in Hillary Clinton. There was speculation in 2004 that Bush was going to get rid of Dick Cheney. Dan Quayle had to suffer through years of such speculation. But the point is, John, that just this kind of goes with the job. Most vice presidents already carry a kick me sign on their back. And just the nature of the beast is that every 4 years, when a president is seen as a little bit of an iffy position for reelection, it's the first thing we turn to. Got to get rid of the vice president. But the problem is, John, we vote for the president. We don't vote for the vice president.
You mentioned quickly George H.W. Bush for the reelection in Houston, as I recall. That's where the second convention was held. Dan Quayle was it Houston, Bill? I don't remember.
It was Houston, John. Yeah. It was Houston. I was there. It was where the famous Bat Buchanan speech was. It was not a very pleasant convention, all said and done.
Yeah,
Houston.
It was rough going for a national convention, but there was beyond speculation. There was guarantees in some of the media that Dan Quayle will depart, and then there were various positions that he was going to be offered. They were going to make him an offer he couldn't refuse. And as you report, Jack Kemp was seen as the replacement because Kemp was a celebrated figure in the party. He would go on to be a vice presidential nominee for Mr. Dole in 96. But Quayle survived. What I take from this is that while the party dances around a better vice president, you stick with what you got, no matter how weak the perception is.
Well, you do, John. But, you know, the problem in 1992, to go back 30 years now in the Wayback Machine, the problem was with George H.W. Bush. The world had changed. The Cold War was over. The Soviets were not there as a threat. It was much more a market for domestic politics. Politics were becoming much more empathetic with a candidate like Bill Clinton saying, "I feel your pain." And a very earnest Cold Warrior like George H.W. Bush was just kind of a fish out of water in that climate. The point is, John, that Dan Quayle was not the problem so much. The president was the problem. But here's where things are a little different in 2024. And this goes back again to the scenario of who Joe Biden faces, but also where Joe Biden physically is in 2024. I don't want to wish anything bad upon him. But what if, getting back to Eisenhower, John, who was plagued with health problems throughout his administration, what if Joe Biden has a health episode between now and, let's say, January of next year? Right. Now we're going to all focus on whether or not Joe Biden can last another 4 years in office effectively. It's going to be all kinds of speculation about invoking the 25th Amendment, or 26th Amendment, excuse me, and it will turn our attention whether or not Kamala Harris could step in and do the job on day one, as they like to say. Again, John, I think this is why if you're in the Joe Biden White House right now, you just go to bed every night saying your prayers and hoping that Donald Trump is your opponent, because if Trump is your opponent in 2024, it's a referendum on Trump and not the president and his health. But absent Trump, though, this potentially is a problem. But you're right, though. Vice presidents, they have the job until they lose it.
I'm speaking to Bill Whelan of the Hoover Institution. He is the Matter of Policy and Politics podcast. He's the host. He's the Goodfellas podcast with Mr. Cochran, Mr. McMaster, and Mr. Ferguson of the Hoover Institution. And Bill mentions the Republicans. When we come back, there's one vice president we haven't spoken of yet. That's Mr. Pence of Indiana. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.